Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
You got to manage games at this time of the year, and then there was multiple turnovers at the blue line. We didn't get our D to change. Guys were out there for a really long time, and they ended up capitalizing. But like they're pushing the third, and you know it's 5 minutes left to go in the game. They made a play. We don't get a box out. We don't get a block, and that was it.
I think it was too much highs and lows in our game today, and that's why we lost. When you play against such a skilled group, you got to be on your toes all the time. And I think that's where we lost the game today a little bit.
Isaac Rosé and Michael Leone on the heels of a game one loss to Laval last night for the Amerks on home ice. It was 5-4. It was back and forth, and yet it was the same, very similar, I should say, result from the season series between these two. Laval has now taken 7 of the 9 games, going 7-1-1 in that stretch, but Rochester has the opportunity to get things even up on home ice tomorrow night. Welcome into Sabres Live with Marty. I'm Brian. It was frustrating. I think, honestly, it kind of felt to me like the Amerks were fortunate to be 4-4 in the third, yet at the same time, there were parts of the game where Laval should have felt fortunate to be within one or even. So that's kind of the way it went, I thought, through the course of the night.
I think when the Rochester Americans were up 3-2, you know, 7 minutes into the second period, that should have been the, you know, we're up 3-2. And
with
now we're going
play.
But it's like, you know, Josh Dunn scores and it's okay. You have to, as a team now, say, this is it. We are taking control of this game. We're not going to give up chances. We're going to play a very mature game. It didn't happen. And look, Laval has a lot of really high-end players, and they can score. And that goal by Barry Boulay late in the second period to make it 4-3 really hurt because, you know, I felt like Rochester was in control of the start of the second period. They were in control of most of the second period, and then in the last 5.5 minutes, they gave up 2 goals. That's where I think the game was played because, you know, you're going to have some back and forth. You're up 1-0, down 2-1, it's going, but then you took a 3-2 lead in the second. That's when you needed to shut things down and be able to manage. And look, maybe there was going to be a goal, but you can't give up too late in the second. You came back in the third just to see another later goal in the third go in after a scramble. And I think there was too many scrambles. Like Michael Leone talks about managing the puck, playing a mature game. Isaac Rosan says too many ups and downs. I think there was too many scrambles. And it started in front of Devin Levi, and Levi was a little scrambly as well. And that's got to get cleaned up.
Yeah, the reason I mentioned the power play, they were up 3-2, and Jack Eye takes a roughing penalty. That's where they did not put Laval away. And even 2-goal lead maybe doesn't do that. But the biggest problem in this season series, all 9 games now, has been Rochester's inability to put the game away. They've been in all of these and in some cases blown leads late. This was, based on how they were playing in the second, a great opportunity. And then it really was, the 3-3 is one thing, but it was a disaster that led to the 4-3 at the end of the second period. Yeah. The forward group was out there for almost 2.5 minutes. They had almost they were upper, you know, like 45 seconds offensive zone. Then it swung the other way and they couldn't get out of it. There was an icing, there were very poor plays along the boards to try to transition up the ice. There was just, you know, chaos. And as you say, and unsurprisingly in his history, it's Barry Boulay who delivers the dagger in the late final seconds of period number 2. But, you know, they get it back to 4-4. I think what's interesting now moving forward, and there were tough lineup decisions for Michael Leone going into last night, kept Riley Fiddler Schultz in the lineup because of his consistent production. The third period, my opinion, they were able to come back because Ostlund was put with Kulik and Rosan. Yuri ends the night with 2 points. I watched the game thinking I would like to see more from Yuri Kulik. And I think maybe you heard a little bit of that in Rosan. And his answer, I think it felt like a guy who, he scored a goal set up by Ostlund, but that he and Kulik need to have a bigger impact on the game.
I think that's fair. And if you are going to size up the prospects of Laval and the prospects of Rochester for Montreal and Buffalo, you look at Logan Mailloux gets a goal. David Reinbacher gets a goal. Oliver Kapanen gets a goal. That is the winning goal. Like, those are your top guys, like your top prospects. I think you see Zach Rosanne getting a goal that made it 4-4, and Constantinos getting a goal that was great as well. But if there's one guy that should stand out in that aspect, it would be Jiří Kulik. Kulik, in the same way that Kapanen played with the Montreal Canadiens this year, played in the playoffs and was able to get that goal. Jiří, look, 13 days, you don't play. He still got a couple of assists. Is there another step for Jiří? 100%. Are you in a tough spot now because you got one game at home Friday night, and then the next three, possibly the next three, would be in Laval? Mm-hmm. It puts you in a bit of a disadvantage. That's why the schedule was good. If you won your two games at home, all you have to do is win one more on the road. But if you lose one of them, all of a sudden it puts you in a tough spot. So Yuri's going to have to be good. And I say good, great, much better in game two Friday night. But Consta and Isaac got goals. You just need to see a little bit more from the guys that will put you over the top in that series.
Right. And again, if you end the game having the likes of Oslin with Kulik and Roseanne, like, then what are you doing with the rest of the group, right? I mean, Does Sligert come back in? Do you do anything to the defense core, which had Komarov back and healthy, but I thought at times each pair looked like it had some tough moments throughout the course of the game. So you have a veteran, I say veteran, he's not played an awful lot, just a little bit last round, in the playoffs, and that was Brännström. There are decisions to be made here, I think. But most importantly, and we've just witnessed this time and again in the Stanley Cup playoffs, most notably how Florida responded to an 0-2 deficit, it's how you respond. So I'm not worried in the slightest about the series. I'm disappointed, as would anybody in Amherst colors be, with the result last night. And if you are projecting down the road, I would argue that the best games that they played against Laval this year have been on the road. So
they've been in Laval. So, yeah, you're right.
So I wouldn't worry too much about it right now.
Again, it's not systematic. I don't think last night was systematic. Correct. I think it's a matter of just being harder on your stick, harder in front of your net, a little bit more under control. Devin's got to make a couple more saves. I felt like there was happy feet. And look, did he make some good saves? Yes. He got bailed out by Sevi Komarov on the big poke check attempt in the third period when he tried to get out to, top of the circles, and Komarov slid down to make a save. That was, that's part of the game. But you just got to be, it's not about systems. I don't even know that it's about the roster. It's more about play, like the game that you know you have to play. Put in that extra weight on your stick, that extra weight on that pass, that extra weight in front of the net to make sure that you're not giving. Barry Boulay is a smaller player. Laval's got a few smaller players that you can get, on if you want to. And Rochester didn't do that last night.
No, and I mean, there are things like the penalty kill. It had been really good against, it'd been good all year, but very good against Laval. They gave up two last night. And the first goal of the game, they are in full possession in the corner, and Wahlberg just fumbled it. And all of a sudden, chaos, and 4 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. So these are easily, things that you can tweak and move on from. But I am very curious to see just how they tweak the line. Tip of the cap, I thought, honorable mention as far as one of the better Amherst last night, not only Cale Clegg, after he basically continued what has been a torrid offensive start to his first AHL postseason, but Lukáš Rusek was really good too, with a couple of assists, and I thought was really important and will be important if they reconfigure the lines here. A final note on that before we venture back into the Stanley Cup playoffs here.
I think this matchup, to me, it felt like it was going to go five games. It's a best out of five. It felt like both teams are going to have their moments. It just happened that I feel Rochester let one slip there. And look, good on Laval. They're a good team. You know, they can provide some offense, and they did. I feel like Rochester let it slip a little bit, but I still feel like this series could easily go to distance in five, and not all of a sudden it's a coin flip in game five.
And what do you do from the, as we know, one of the most prepared netminders ever as far as routine? You know, with Devin having the shutout streak finally snapped last night, what would you expect from him on Friday?
I'm not worried. I think they're going to look at some video and you know, get on the ice for practice and kind of say, okay, this is almost 2 weeks of no game action. It felt like there was, you know, the motor was going a little too fast, and that's the adrenaline. That's the, oh, let's go type of situation. Now you've played, you breathe in, you kind of just get through your routine and you go, I want to see that same thing that Michael Leone said about the team, about staying under control and playing a mature game. I want to see the same thing for Devin, but look, it's circumstantial, the fact that you don't play in 2 weeks, you get in, it's a high-pressure type of game against a good opponent, and then all of a sudden the motor goes a little too much.
I guess, but I mean, both teams had over a week, so I don't even look at it as anything. And Primo had only played in one game in the playoffs and didn't win that one, so it had been forever since he actually picked up a victory. So,
and he wasn't great. I mean, Primo wasn't great yesterday, mm-hmm. So you had an opportunity, but you got to four, but you gave up five.
Yeah. Last night, minimal offense, to say the least, in Vegas, and that ends up being the storyline to end their season. Blanked in consecutive games by Stuart Skinner, and overtime heroics from an unlikely source for the Oilers, who are back again in the Western Conference Final.
Is that a honorary banner that you got to put up at the T-Mobile Arena, blank by Stuart Skinner in back-to-back games to finish the series and lose in five
to
the Edmonton Oilers?
If you win them, not when you lose them.
I'm saying, like, maybe as a motivation all summer long to be better next year. But yes, it was unlikely for me to think that Stuart Skinner was going to come in this series because Calvin Pickard was doing so well. Pickard gets hurt. Skinner comes in, wins two of the three games that he plays. And you're right, Kasperi Kapanen scores the game-winning goal, 1-0 in overtime. Now, Duffer, the Edmonton Oilers have scored 16 goals in five games. How many goals did Draisaitl and McDavid get out of the 16?
Half.
He got three. Two Draisaitl and one McDavid. They got 13 goals from other sources, Kapanen being one, Jake Walman, Darnell Nurse, Connor Brown, Zach Hyman. They all had one, but Colson had one. And then you have Evander Kane with two, Adam Henrique with two, and Corey Perry with three. That is your goal scorers in this series. That is why the Oilers are a different team right now, because, yes, McDavid and Draisaitl, you got to keep an eye on them. They drive the offense. But the other supporting cast that has been able to score and been able to produce and make the difference has been the key. You got seven goals from Kane, Perry, and Adam Henrique out of the 16. Like, that's a big number, and that's why they advance. And yes, Stuart Skinner was great. I actually thought Adin Hill was fantastic in that game last night for Vegas. Vegas didn't have Mark Stone. He wasn't available for the game, dealing with injuries again. But yeah, they Stuart Skinner blanked them, really played well, made a great save on Eichel on the blocker, a save on Dorfiev late in the game. But at the end of the day, it's the depth scoring of the Edmonton Oilers that came through.
We can and will talk about Edmonton more moving forward because they are doing so. I think the big story in the NHL right now is what happens with Vegas. Yes. I've been wanting to talk to our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, for quite some time about this topic. Darren is unavailable today, so you can put on your... Well, yeah, I mean, you have a TSN hat, so you can put it on and play the role. Vegas has always done things boldly and their way. What does the future hold for Jack Eichel? Because He has 1 year left in his deal,
yes,
meaning do they extend him this summer or do they boldly trade him? Guess who would pony up everything they have? The Boston Bruins, who are trying to change their future, right? This is real. This is not some made-up nonsense.
Yeah, this isn't like you on a blackboard, a board in your room with like wires and red and blue wires and conspiracy theories. That's a very, very simple connection. Very simple connection.
Simplest, positive and negative on the battery. If you can connect the two in the right places, you are going to be fine. No, but this is real. Like, so what, like Jack is still bordering on being one of the younger core players.
Yes.
Even though he's, you know, at the end of a monster deal, which
he's 28.
So, but like, look around them. And the thing is, this Vegas team basically can be run back in its entirety next year based on how all the contracts are done for their key players at forward and on defense. The only exception is Nick Hague as an RFA, but otherwise everyone is locked in with term and Aiden Hill's locked in. So because Vegas tends to do something often dramatic, I'm sitting here wondering, are they really just going to run it back and hope they have a stronger finish to a playoff series than what they just had against Edmonton? I don't know. I think they're, again, the fascinating team to look for heading into the draft, heading into free agency.
Oh, they're always fascinating because they always do something that you're like, oh, this is a Vegas way. But, you know, they reacquired Riley Smith. He's a UFA. He's gonzo. They got Brendan Saad. He's a UFA. He's gone. Victor Olofsson's a UFA. Maybe they signed Victor as depth at, you know, a number that is what he was making, like somewhere around $1 million. That's fine. Their defense is still all there. Petrangelo, Hanifin, Theodore, McNabb, Whitecloud. They're still out there. They have to sign Nick Hague. He's an RFA. So look, I think you can run it back. And I think Vegas does run it back. I think to me, if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, Jack Eichel had probably his best season. He had 94 points this year, and he missed five games. He probably would have gotten 100 points if he played all 82. His point per game average would have gotten him over 100 points. I think you got to sign him, and now you're thinking you're going to give him, what, $13 million? Like, yeah, that's probably what it's going to cost you.
But it cuts two ways here. Jack's already won a cup there.
Yeah.
If Jack,
what does Jack want to do?
If Jack always wanted to go play in Boston, then he just sits there. And then we're potentially looking at a Quinn Hughes type situation, right? Like,
yes.
If Quinn, you know what I mean? If Quinn 2 years from now is adamant he's going to go play with his brothers, there's not a darn thing Vancouver can do, even though they hired a defenseman as their head coach and one that Quinn Hughes apparently really likes in Adam Foote. So the Canucks are continuing to do everything possible. But Jack has clearly embraced the spotlight. Did it in Vegas. Stunning performance when they won the cup. There's a Boston team that desperately needs a superstar in the middle. There is also, on the heels of four straight exits to the Edmonton Oilers, a Los Angeles Kings team that just got a new general manager in Ken Holland, and they need to make a ad with a soon-retiring Anze Kopitar. They need to have something else down the middle. So does L.A. push Vegas and say, look, you're never going to sign him, and they pony up? I don't know. I just think there's there's a reality to this as far as needs on both coasts, zooming in on what's happening in Vegas.
I think Jack Eichel's a fantastic player, and we got to see him in Buffalo. Unfortunately, in Buffalo, the situation, you know, coaching, you know, the players, whatever, it didn't work, right? The neck then, and then you trade them, and that's fine. Like, you ended up with getting Alex Tuch and Peyton Krebs and the picks and all of that. So it worked for Vegas really well. But the thing with Jack is I always question, like, is he the alpha? Is he the alpha guy, right? Because when they won the cup, Jonathan Marchessault was the alpha guy, right? They had Chandler Stephenson right with Jack, but giving him that support. And now it feels like Jack is the one guy that's the alpha on the island. And I don't know. Like, I look at the last two playoff games. They didn't get any goals. They got blanked 3-0 and 1-0 from Stuart Skinner. They lose in five. And I'm like, is Jack Eichel going to look around and say, I don't want to be that alpha guy, but then wherever you go, you're going to have to be? Or is he looking around saying, I need a little bit more help and I'm not getting it in Vegas right now? Because they moved on from Stevenson and Marchessault and others, and it may continue to happen. I don't know. I think this will be a very, very interesting summer for Vegas and Jack Eichel to see where they're going. And if I'm Vegas, I think I would want to sign Jack. I would want to say, listen, we want you. We want you to be part of it. Kind of like Vancouver would probably want to keep Quinn Hughes for the forever. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Jack's decision.
But what do you think he will do? That's the thing. Like, once you've won, and I don't know. I guess it's pretty clear. Like, I'm thinking he's not going to stay.
Yeah, so. And I think he is, because Vegas is the type of team that has shown now that every year they're going to go for it. And I feel like if you're Jack Eichel, like, if you could go to Boston, great. You're going to be playing in your backyard. You're from Boston. You played college there. But is Boston really giving you the vibes that they are going to be in it every year?
When they acquire Jack Eichel, I would suggest that it changes them pretty quickly.
It changes them a little bit, yes, because now all of a sudden you have Jack Eichel with David Pastrnak, and it's like, oh, that's a good combo. But where's the rest of it? And yes, McAvoy is going to be, you know, healthy next year, and Jeremy Swayman's going to be, you know, in camp and not having a contract issue. There's some question marks that are going to be answered moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the same comfort level in Don Sweeney as a GM in Boston saying, I'm going to be rebuilding this, because it has been going kind of the other way. But Vegas is in it all the time. And I think my comfort level would be in Vegas being competitive for much longer than Boston will be.
Do you think they will be, though, based on what I suggested is an aging group right now?
Yeah, I think they will be. I think the big question for me is Mark Stone. I think Mark Stone is going to be one of those long-term IR type scenario. He's 33 years old, makes $9.5 million the next 2 years. Would I give $9.5 million to Mark Stone right now? Say, hey, I'll take you on 2-year deal, $9.5 million? No way. I think that's above what I would pay for Mark Stone. And I think the injury is a problem. I think Mark Stone is going to be one of those curious cases moving forward of LTIR. And if they can save that money, then they'll spend it somewhere else and they'll go acquire somebody. They'll be fine. But if Mark Stone is playing, that 9.5 is going to hurt you.
If Vegas realizes that Eichel isn't going to stay, Boston probably doesn't have to do anything. They could just wait it out and hope that they get him through free agency in a year. And I just suggested LA could use a piece like Eichel. Obviously, yeah. Most teams could. Are there other teams you could see entering the fray here, just off the top of your head, that would be a good fit with Eichel?
Off the top of my head, Tampa. I think that when you look at, okay, they have been the type of team that, kind of like Vegas, have been very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And now you have Braden Point as your top line center. And then it's like, who's your second line center? It's Cirelli, but is Cirelli better suited as a third line center? You know, like, I think Tampa would be a team that I could see being aggressive in that situation. I don't think it would be out west. So I'm looking at out east. Are the Rangers a team that would be aggressive? They just acquired JT Miller. Maybe they're looking and saying, hey, let's get a guy like Jack Eichel. So I think Tampa and the Rangers would be two that would stand out for me right now as teams that could be aggressive in the Eastern Conference.
When last we spoke on this show, we were surprised by a stunning Norwegian comeback against Team USA at the World Championships. Care to fill in the audience on the details as to how this one ended yesterday?
USA won 6-5. So there
Tage
you go.
Thompson hat trick, I might add.
Yes, Tage Thompson hat trick. They get 2 points, not the 3 points they would have got in regulation, but Tage lets go of the one-timer bomb on a 4-on-3 power play in overtime. And yes, Tage got the hat trick, and I wasn't really paying much attention to it because I was like, seriously, like you lose to Switzerland 3-0. You were up 5-1 to Norway. It's 5-5. I'm a little disappointed with how this is turning out for the USA, but they were, I mean, they were fine.
There, and, by the looks of it.
Hey,
I said big crowd there by the looks of it. Yeah, anyway, no, there's 26 games to go in the preliminary portion of the tournament, and we'll get to the finish line, I think, before the end of the month of May.
Yes, it is before the end of the month of May.
Okay. Well, in the meantime,
it's a great trip. It's a great trip, Duffer. I've done it. I went to Turku and Helsinki, and it was fantastic. I didn't play any minutes. I was party planning committee chair, and I had a good time.
Celebrate Tage Thompson. That's what we want you to do, as he represents Team USA at the World Championships. And you can do so by signing up for a half or full season ticket membership. Become a member to get an exclusive Tage Thompson USA t-shirt. Visit Sabres.com/TNT today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.